The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network, as well as on cagematch.net. I'm Strigger. As always, I am joined by Dylan. Hi, Dylan.
Hi, everybody out there. What a great time we're going to have. Me and Strigger.
And our special guest for this show, the man that is absolutely excited about whatever happens in Stardom, all caps, Sondre. Welcome to the show, Sondre.
Hi, I'm Sondre Bjørn. You've probably heard me before because I've been on this show before.
Yes, you have. You've been on the Patreon. And I am here, of course, with two-thirds of the dramatic Dream Dragons. Want to give a shout-out to the third member of this trio, Yannick, as well. We couldn't have Yannick on this show because I don't believe in four-man booths. I think the three-man booth for commentary is perfect. And I think three men for looking back at one of these, the biggest shows of the year, is just a perfect addition. So, Sondre, we're glad to have you here. And we're going to look at this incredible, incredible show from Stardom All-Star Grand Queendom 2023. And I think there are, Sondre and I, we talked about it off air, there are so many superlatives that you can throw at this show. I would just say this is an absolute landmark show for women's wrestling, for wrestling in general in Japan. And we also just talked about it off the air. I think this show will inspire a complete new generation of women's wrestlers in Japan and in lots of different countries, I would say, because it felt like that everybody and their grandmother was watching this show. And when you have someone like Mariah May on commentary, for example, who says that Mercedes was one of her inspirations to become a wrestler, there will be, in 10 or 15 years down the line, will be lots of women that will point back to this show and say, this is it. This is the show that I decided to become a professional wrestler, Dylan.
Yeah, you know, I think that's very interesting. Obviously, this show is very, it was like more or less a tribute show to the original Dream Slam, you know, 30 years ago at this point, for that, like very similar in the Yokohama. You know, I think if anything, the Stardom fan base, in particular in the Joshi fan base, as time has gone along, has grown so diverse that there are so many different types of fans that have watched it. You know, this show definitely feels like a big deal and hopefully is a turning point. That's the hope, you know, you would have here. And obviously a huge success in the realm of Stardom. And hopefully we can get there to that point to where, you know, because the one 30 years ago was three times as big as this, you know, in terms of attendance and things like that. It was a different era. You know, it's not even comparable. And the fan base is a little bit different. They were still kind of holding on. It was really different in the 80s. But, they, you know, the teenage girl demographic kind of grew up at that point. And then there were a lot of fans that just liked it because of the wrestling, because it was good wrestling. And I think that's where we're at with Stardom right now. Hopefully we can see that turning point to where you can get all of these different fan bases in Japan specifically, but also worldwide are seeing this. And I think if nothing else, I think watching this show will be, if you are a new fan and this show did have a lot of hype, Obviously, Mercedes coming in is going to be a big deal to a lot of the newer fans worldwide. And in Japan, you have the main event and all kinds of stuff, really, on the show that hopefully leads to more people getting involved and more interested and more ready to watch Stardom.
Absolutely. And Sondre, we are recording this a couple of hours after the show ended. I messaged you and said, let's sit down for a couple of hours and look at it. Then what do you think, what sort of an impact will this show have on the grand scheme? So kind of looking at it from a bigger picture.
From a bigger picture, I think this show, first of all, it's a smashing success for Stardom just on a work rate perspective. Like, I can say that every match on this show has delivered on the main card. And yeah. I felt it was no match that were the lower, skip this match or don't watch this. The whole show was worth watching. And but I also think that you guys are right. It's gonna be very influential for people. I think there might be some future Tom Road people in the crowd that that saw the main event and decided that they are gonna wrestle that style in the future, and I would like that. But yeah, right now it's too early to tell to what kind of aftermath this show will have, but as of the day it happened, I think this show should be looked back on as a smashing success.
Yes.
And don't you think, too, that another thing about this that makes it feel like a turning point show, if you look at the show, every title changed hands. Yes. Like, we're in a whole new era of the company now. And I think that was a big kind of, like, grand lesson of the show is that it was this, you know, I saw something you said on Twitter, Striga, where it was something like the start of a new one, and, you know, end of the old era into a new one. And I think I kind of got that vibe here on that as well. I think that's going to help some people. If you were a newer fan or somebody tuning into this, that can just, now you're at the point where we're going forward in this new vision, pretty much.
I mean, I think I said closing of a chapter because nobody came out afterwards to challenge Tom, but you can also look at it more of closing a book because nobody came out. And this was just it. This was the end of the show. And what happens from here on will be something completely new with a complete new set of champions, much like you mentioned. So we'll have to wait and see where all the pieces fall in the end. And this show obviously also with so many different groups coming together in recent weeks and also here on this show, there was a lot of history behind this show. And you mentioned the show 30 years ago, Dylan. I looked back on Cage Match, and this year, 2023, is the year that the Yokohama Arena has been the most frequented since 2003. Actually, and in 2003 there were a couple of shows that happened in that arena. It was a show from New Japan Pro Wrestling Yokohama Dead Out that drew 12,500 officially. There were two WWE SmackDown house shows. World Japan ran a show actually on March 1st with Katsuhiko Nakajima's first outing on a pro wrestling show. Not his first match. He did a karate demonstration inside the ring. And there was also, of course, the All Japan 35th anniversary show, which drew approximately 10,000 people, at least that was announced at that point. And today we had with Stardom a show that drew over 5,500 people. That means that this show, by a small margin, outdrew New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom 17 in Yokohama, which has to be considered a tremendous smashing success for a company like Stardom.
Absolutely. It just proves where they're at right now. I mean, this is clearly the number two company in Japan right now, besides New Japan. And we saw that showcased once again. And the great thing about them, too, is that they're just scratching the surface of what they could do in terms of business-wise. Mm. You know, the more they run bigger shows, the more success they're going to have. We've seen these records get broken consistently. We just had their show in December be that, like, this huge show. It's like having WrestleMania two times in a year for a WWE where you put it together, and this felt like a huge show. And that's kind of what I always say about them, is that they're doing great now, but there's so much unearthed potential that they could have. If they keep running bigger shows, they're going to keep having this kind of success.
Yes. Sondre.
Yes. They have now done the first show in Sumo Hall in 8 years. They've now done the first Old Award in forever. I'm talking Joshi, of course. And they've now done the Yokohama Arena first show in 20 years for Joshi. The only thing left for them that they haven't done that is the first in so many years is the Tokyo Dome.
Right.
That is where they can go from here.
That should be the goal, really.
That is the next goal for them.
I predicted that at the end of last year. I said that, you know, obviously the title reign won't end there now. It ended a little earlier than I may have thought. But I said that's where Julia's title reign could end, is at the Dome. I think that we're right close by to it. And that will come sooner rather than later. We'll see what they have planned. My idea was to kind of do it the same weekend, kind of pair it with New Japan, because that seemed like a real, like, obviously New Japan would want to do multiple shows at the Dome. We've seen that in the years past. This year it didn't happen because their business was a little down. Yeah. But now they have the option of doing a back-to-back Dome show. One day Stardom, one day New Japan. And I still think that's very, very possible.
January 4, January 5 would be on the table again.
Yeah, and make it its own legacy type, like standalone event. Like Stardom would have their own, Wrestle Kingdom, Wrestle Queendom, but like more official. Like this is the big show. Because I said, there's so much unearthed potential right now that we have. Who's to say? Everyone thought December would be like one of the biggest shows possible. This one overshadowed it at the end of the day in the grand scheme of things. So yeah, I think that Tokyo Dome show is coming. The upside's there. And if they keep running things, if they keep playing their cards right, they'll be able to be very successful. I think if they ran a Dome show, if that were to happen, I think they would be on the same level as New Japan, like drawing wise. I think there would not be a big discrepancy at all between the attendances between the Stardom show and the New Japan Wrestle Kingdom.
We've always said it here on the show, Dylan. When you do a big show, people will come.
Yeah.
And when you when you do a bigger building, more people will come. That's very much the core of what wrestling has been for the last couple of years. And when we jump into this show, once again, going back to the show 20 years ago, All Japan Women's Show, there are two wrestlers that were on that show that also were on this show today in Nanae Takahashi and Momoe Nakanishi. And I have not watched the opening Rumble match. I guess you did. Sondre, what do you have to say about this first match, the 19 Women Rumble?
It was a rumble. It was a pre-show rumble. Like, I thought the whole, all the whole match up until when Momone Nakanishi came in was fine, but when she came in, she just continued to prove that she has got it. She hasn't lost a step. She could still do like the classic high speed stuff that she always has done. And I felt that energy was really fun.
Special shout out to Sondre's dog in the background.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, very high for mobile, I think. As it should be. To me there was no real surprises in the Battle Royale. I expected some legacy people. They've done these kind of things before overall, and it's been a lot of fun. I mean, the main thing of this match was the Stardom machines. You had a super strong machine, you had super giant machine, you had super big machine, like Stardom big machine, which was a Yuna Mizumori coming in. So you had all these different machines, and it all ended with Mai Sakurai winning at the end, which she was the finalist of the Cinderella tournament.
Right.
Which is a much maligned tournament, I would say, and justifiably so. But they have done a great job of getting her character over. So for future purposes, I think that's a fine choice for a winner, but definitely nothing to write home about.
Yeah. So I came in at the second pre-show match. It was an 8-man tag match, which saw the team of Wado Tai battle Club Venus plus Tekla, which directly brought up an incredible meme with Club Venus dancing and Tekla just standing there at the entrance ramp, which was hilarious. And Wado Tai ended up winning the match with, I would say, Natsuko Tora being the standout of their team. While in Club Venus, I really liked all of the women that I saw. Partly for the first time, I saw Jessie and Mariah. I think it's for the second time, Zena for the first time. Tekla, obviously, is very, very good. Has been in Japan for a long, long time. And they kind of did this weird story where the foreigners adopted Tekla to their team because Tekla helped them get around in Japan and translating for them, and now they want her to be part of their team, which in the first minutes of the match worked out pretty well, but then they had this weird finish where they had issues about the black box when Mariah had it and wanted Tekla to hit her opponent with it, but in the end it backfired, and from there on the match just ended abruptly. Thought the finish was very hokey. Match itself was okay, I thought.
Yeah, Saki Kashima finish.
Yeah, Tekla's too honorable for that.
Yeah.
Overall, she won't go down with these Club Venus shenanigans. Yeah, like, it was okay. Like, I don't think a lot of
both,
out of this.
Both these matches were dark matches that, in the end, doesn't really matter.
Yeah, like, and that's where these are, you know, to me. Yeah. It's unfortunate that Momo particularly is there, because everybody knows her talent level, but I mean, she, you know, this Wado Tai run has not been anything to be proud of, I would say, and the rest, I mean, you know, like, they're kind of interesting characters as heels.
Yeah.
But I think this is about where they should be, and
yeah, like, something like this match would be really out of place if it was on the main card.
And people, oh, yeah. Like Jesse and Zena are just like very raw, you know. At the end of the day, even Mariah, who I mean, I've been more impressed by than I thought I would be when she came in. I had really low expectations for all three of these, but Mariah's done a good job in Stardom in her short time there. And you hope that the other two can have good potential down the line.
And I want to say that Mariah also was very good in commentary. Really liked her color influence that she had here in commentary for this show. Enjoyed that very much.
Yeah, I thought the commentary was, yeah, that's a great point, Strig. I think that the commentary in general was really strong. You had her, Chris Chilton that was there from New Japan, and you had Sonny, who is like the backstage guy, English-speaking for Stardom. I thought that they did a good job overall. And, you know, obviously, you have to really praise Chilton, especially because he's coming in from an outside perspective, but he felt like he knew what was going on. You know, it wasn't like he was, you know, like, I didn't know what was going on.
Momo Koga was supposed to be on commentary, but she got hurt during the Rumble.
Exactly, yeah. So I think someone fell on her head, and they mentioned that she was rushed to a hospital nearby, yeah.
Yeah. We haven't gotten any updates on that. I, as a classic Puro nerd, watched this show with Japanese commentary.
Of course you did.
Well, I didn't even know that was an option. So.
I think you can just buy the other stream.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what followed up next was the actual opening match of the show, and they probably couldn't have chosen a better opening kind of match, with Mei Sera and Starlight Kid going over Asumi and Mei Suruga, who had matching outfits. But Mei is very used to these wings that she has, while Asumi couldn't really handle them and almost fell on the stage, which looked very funny. Match itself was incredible. I thought it was very, very good for an opening kind of match. Much like I said, lots of reversals, of course, with the upset in the end of Sera defeating Asumi. Of course, Mei Sera is the former Mei Hoshitsuki, and she hadn't wrestled in... almost 1.5 years, and she only had her return match here in this one, and immediately upset the high-speed champion, Sondre.
Yeah, she was put into the most complex, exhausting style of wrestling, and yes, looked like she hadn't missed a beat.
That's
after
crazy.
Not wrestling for 1.5 years, and I think that is just crazy. Like Mei Sera, Mei Hotosuki, I am so happy that she's back in Stardom. And of course, she was in Marvelous, and then she went away for one and a half year years, and now she's here. I think her and Asumu should be a really good feud for the high-speed title that I could see leading to Asumu losing the high-speed title.
Hmm. Do you expect that as well, Dylan?
Not even a hint of ring rust here from Mei Sera. Just a tremendous wrestler. I was always a huge fan of hers. And you see people that came from the Marvelous Dojo, same thing with Kohaku and Wave, is like, to me, one of the best non-stardom talents in Joshi. And now Sera getting this spot here where you just have just a tremendous wrestler. You know, she shined bright. Just like I knew she would. I never doubted her because she's such a great talent. I always thought so highly of her. And so young, so energetic. I mean, all of these are really, and they did good. But yeah, Sera was the standout, but everybody did good. Obviously, you see what kind of talent they have. If Azumi and Sera do have that match, which we all expect them to, and we know they will, yeah, I could totally see Sera winning. I mean, Azumi's had this belt for so long now.
Yeah, it's a record-setting reign.
I really think that it's time for her to move up. I mean, she, to me, is one of the best, like, the best overall talents in the company, just wrestling-wise. I've always championed her as one of the best wrestlers for a long time now, and think that she deserves to be in main event-level spots, to me. She has everything it takes to be that star player, and especially in-ring-wise, you know. Obviously, everyone will lump her into the high-speed spot, but she's had longer matches even during this reign, like with Starlight, and I think that she could do great in any scenario. I really respect her talent. So I'm all for Sera taking the reins, coming in as a new player, give her something to hang her hat on, and Azumi moving up the card and getting white belt shots, red belt shots. Yeah. Like, she should be in those roles to me.
I really think that they need to finally capitalize what they have with her, because she's been around for almost 10 years now and has always been pretty much in the same slot up until now. And with, for example, the retirement that we saw on this show, you never know for how long they have these kinds of talents like Asumi, and they really need to capitalize here with what you said, with white belt, red belt shots, quickly moving up the card. I would say she doesn't have to win any title at the first challenge, but get closer and closer, and in the end maybe also get a tag title shot. We'll see about that, but definitely Asumi needs to move up.
What do you guys think about Mei Suruga in this match? She, of course, a Choco Pro got to move wrestler that it isn't featured that much in Stardom, but what do you guys think about her in this match?
Yeah, I think she will always be a nice addition to these bigger shows that Stardom does. Depends on what her alliances are, and it feels like that she's very much happy with what she has, that she gets to go back and forth from Japan to America right now. But much like I said, with Asumi, maybe also looking at different titles, her and Mei Suruga, I thought, was a very good tag team.
Yeah, I think it's so fun to see Mei Suruga hit like moves that she invented on the like chocolate mat in the Choco Pro during the pandemic, and see her hit them in the ring. Like, yeah, the ring post spot is like the spot she used to do from the wall in Choco Pro, and it's It is also really cool to see her in these like big matches.
Really need to put this into context, like from, like, I don't know, 20, 30 people from Chocolate Square to Yokohama Arena with over 5,000 people. That's the range that Mei Suruga has.
Oh, absolutely. She's an incredible talent. She has been for years now at this point. A very charismatic performer, can fit in. And that's why she's kind of perfect for these kind of openers, because of her experiences in Chocolate Square, where you could really... And a lot of it is really determined. You know, you're not going to have epic matches in Chocolate Square. You know, you have to use that charisma and be inventive and creative to get the most out of the setting. And she is one of the best at it. So you can bring that to this big stage. It makes her stand out and do good. You know, And she's always, like you said, Strig, I totally agree with what you said, always a welcome addition to these bigger shows.
Yeah.
What followed was probably, from a mainstream perspective, the most important match of the entire show. Because we got Fuwa-chan in her second ever match. And they mentioned on commentary she is a very well-known comedian in Japan and a YouTuber. She has 1 million subscribers to her YouTube channel and 700,000 followers on her Instagram, for example. And this show, this match, was broadcast live on Nippon TV, one of the biggest TV stations in Japan. And you can also look at who else was in this match with Utami Hayashishita, Miyu Amasaki at the other team, and Hasuki as Fuwa's tag team partner. They placed three women in this match that got an extreme amount of exposure just from being in this match. And what we got to see was an incredible showing from Fuwa. They showed clips before the match of her training with Katsuhiko Okada. And the way, I always say this when I look at wrestlers that have their first matches, the way that she moved inside the ring, the way she jumped her missile kick, the way that she in the end took the German suplex from Hayashishita was very good for a first attempt. And of course, she was in there with three extremely talented wrestlers on their own right, but Fuwa on her own was just incredible for her experience level, Dylan.
Oh, absolutely. And it shows if you have people that put the right care into your training, you know, it shows how much that could go, you know, how long of a way that could go for you. I think I've always said, I don't know if we've actually even spoken on this too much on this show, but I will say it here. I think the regular way of wrestling training is mega outdated. And stuff like this and Logan Paul and WWE shows it. If you put care into somebody and want them to succeed and not have to make them prove themselves so much over and over, that shows that you could get success out of, I don't want to say anybody, but I think it would be a lot more open, you know, the door would be a lot more open if they took this kind of care for training like this, because that's a big part of this. I mean, she did look good. But you have to give credit to how they prepared her for this. And obviously the people in the ring involved around her obviously did a great job as well. And it's exactly what you'd expect. Utami, Hazuki, super pros. Amasaki, still a young wrestler in her own right, but still I thought looked very, very, you know, it's not like she stood out at all in a negative way. But obviously what you said is true about Fuwa-chan being such a big mainstream type of person. And to get this spot is a huge deal for Stardom as a company. And obviously a big moment for the people involved, and hopefully the exposure does lead to somewhere. Kind of like you were saying at the start, hopefully some people will see this and be more interested in wrestling going forward.
Yeah, she looked so natural in the ring. It was scary. I hadn't seen the first Fuwa-chan match because it made tape like a couple of months after it happened, so I just forgot about it. And I thought this was just an awesome showing from her. And I want to see more of her. And I hope she's going to be more on the shows in the future.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Was a great showing from her. And what followed was another great showing on this card. Only the third match officially on this card with the two pre-show matches there. It was Himeka's retirement match. It was not her final appearance inside a ring. They will have that in Shinjuku Phase for Wave, I think it is. But Himeka here...
Is it Corrigan? I think it's Corrigan.
It's Corrigan. Oh, it might also be Corrigan. Yeah. Could be. It was Himeka's final match against her, one of her best friends in the world and her tag team partner in Maika. Maika defeated her after multiple Michinoku drivers in the end. The first one was very gentle, I want to say, and it was part of the story that Maika just wouldn't put Himeka away. In the end, Sondre, you mentioned it on Twitter. It was this shoot headbutt. I love you shoot headbutt. And the Michinoku drivers that put Himeka away in a emotional roller coaster for those that have been following these two. Sondre, how did you feel about this?
it was so emotional. Like that, just before the match even started, when Mina Shirakawa did the ring announcing for this match, it was emotional, because if you didn't know, Mina Shirakawa did the announcing for Himika's first match ever in back in AWG Actress, which was like that was a unique moment then, because Mina hadn't started wrestling yet, and she was just starting to get into the wrestling industry. And of course, now they have come so far, and she did the announcing again, and Himika hugged her like right after she was done with the announcement. And like just even before the bell rang, I was emotional and had tears in my eyes, because this story is so, like, they are real life friends that have been connected for their whole Stardom runs almost, and to see them have a final singles match in Himika's final Stardom match, it was so special.
Yeah, you know, I think that all of that is so true, and I think that's. This really stood out to me in terms of the realness of it on this card, which, I mean, there's a lot of great things on this card, but this had the most real emotion to it, in my opinion, just on the show. And obviously, you can see why, because it was a real situation that she's retiring. One thing I will criticize this, because I really liked this match. This was probably my second favorite match on the whole show, honestly. But I wish that we had gotten more in terms of the hype of it, you know? It's like, she won, and their performance was really emotional and great and all that stuff. But I would have loved to have seen, you know, some kind of tribute video, you know, something with everybody talking about her, you know, like all the people down at the Mondo. And even the match just lingering on a little bit more. This felt like an AEW moment, kind of, where, like, something happens, and then they just move on.
I mean, you know? They had the promo at the end, but yeah, I see where you're coming from. I think they might be saving that the video package and all that for the ceremony show.
Yeah, I think so too.
And they're like produce
show. That's fine them. And all, but this show is way bigger than that. And I agree. I would have liked to have seen like all of that take place here, where the most people are watching, for a career that, you know, Micah and Himika are a great tag team in the history of the Goddess titles. You know, like, they had a great run together. And Mayhime is a really good team. Hopefully they can mean something. But I did feel, oh, this is the third match on the show, and, you know, they didn't really give it the grand treatment that I think they could have. I mean, it was cool, and that stuff with Mina was great, and their wrestling was really great, I thought.
Yeah.
But I do think they could have hyped it up overall a little bit more. And like you said, maybe they will save it for that stuff. That's fine. But I wish it would have been on this show instead.
Notably, Himika did her first dive in this match ever.
Yes! Right. She did also, yeah, she did the dive. She did multiple callbacks, of course, to Jumbo Tsuruta once again with the big knee. Yeah, just very, very good stuff. I can see, Dylan, why this was your second favorite match of the show. Definitely one of those that you can make a case for.
It is my third favorite on the show.
Yeah, the one blemish, the elephant in the room, is the Goddesses of Stardom title match with Mirai just coming off her second victory in the Cinderella tournament. Kind of a weird payoff to get a tag title shot right after that, right? And she and Ami Sorei beat the Neo Stardom goon Nanae Takahashi and Yu by countout in 12-25 in a finish, Dylan, that very much screamed, "This isn't working for me, sister."
That's almost certainly what probably happened here. yeah, when you were talking about earlier on, they realized like there was no bad parts to the show. Like, I was thinking of this match, and I thought such a disappointment, like, for what it should have been. And the talent level here is so great. You know, Nanae and Yu are an amazing team. 7-Up, they've had a tremendous run, one of the best Goddesses runs in many, many years. And to see it come to an end this way, in this, like, really unspectacular mid-card match with just a horrible finish with the count.
I thought the match was really good up until the finish.
I don't think it was standout. I mean, it was good. I mean,
it was good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you can't, these four, you're not going to have a match less than good. But it was so unspectacular and unmemorable to what it should have been. I mean, compare this to the Mahime match in February. I mean, like, that match like trots this by leaps and leaps and bounds. And it shouldn't have. Like, this should have been a great match. This is one of the matches I thought was a sleeper match heading into the show. And it just did not live up to that.
7-Up has also had the best in-ring Goddess of Stardom reign in years.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I followed this promotion for years, and I don't think I've ever seen a, like, that good of a Goddess of Stardom in-ring run. And I thought, like, both you and Nane are, like, a top, like, they are on the top of my Stardom list this year, just because of all the good matches they've had as a duo and as a trio with Yuna Mizumori. But it was a very lame finish to such a good and memorable reign.
Yeah, and the finish was really awkward in many aspects, because it seemed like that all five involved, including the referee, didn't really know what to do in this situation, because at the 18 or 19 call, the ref suddenly stopped counting when Yu was on the apron, and it looked like he was going to, like, start counting all over again. And I actually expected that, because she was on the apron, but no, he did not. He just counted the 20, and everybody was confused. And that was it. Not good.
And you have to say, I think this, like you said that, Sandre, but in reality, I think these titles have been some of the best in terms of, like, work rate stuff. I mean, you go back to Hazuki and Koguma. I thought they had multiple reigns kind of split up in that weird period, but they had great run. Julie and Shuri, when they were tag team champions, were great. All the way back, and then you go back maybe before the pandemic, but you had teams like, you know, when Tokyo Cyber Squad was still a thing with Kiona and Konami, you had, you know, lots of different teams. Jungle Assault Nation, like, they weren't that big of a team, but I love them as a faction. But, you had, like, Momo Yutami. So these belts have always been work rate style of belts and been some of the highlights of the company. I think that's a great thing about Stardom, is that, and we'll talk about the next match as well, all of their titles really have had runs. I don't think there's a bad quality title in the promotion. When you look at High Speed, the Goddesses, the Artist, White Belt, Red Belt, all of those titles have their own charm and great runs associated with them. And so to see it in this way, it really stands out. It's like a really glaring fault to me for it to end in this way.
Yeah. This is definitely the one match that had a bummer on the show for me.
Definitely a bummer on the show. But we followed up with another very exciting match, in my opinion. This is my third favorite match of the show, actually. The Artist of Stardom title with the team of Restart, Kairi Natsupoi and Saori Ano, defeating Prominence, Suzu Suzuki, Risa Sera and Hiragi Kurumi, with, of course, Prominence winning the belt back in December of last year, where they defeated Momo Watanabe, Saki Kashima, and Starlight Kid. Then went on to defend it twice in March and in early April. And now, in their third title defense, they fell to Restart, which is a group that came together out of the end of... what's the stable...
They didn't end, but you're talking about Cosmic Angels.
They didn't really end, but, well...
Mina left.
Mina left and kind of left.
Well, Restart had formed before that.
Yeah, yeah. And they kind of left her on her own, and then we saw the return of Saori Ano in Curriken Hall one week ago, actually, I think it was. And from there on, they formed a team that goes back to the times when Stardom and Actress Girls were working together, and the project that they had back in the day was called Start, and Saori Ano and Natsupoi, way back as Natsumi Maki, had runs in Stardom in 2015-16, back in the day when Kairi Hojo was also still around, and her and Natsumi Maki teamed a couple of times. And so they go back to this to have a group called Restart, and they immediately won the titles here of prominence. And I thought this 6-woman tag was incredibly good. I enjoyed this a lot. Zuzu, of course, once again was tremendous in this match. Saori Ano showed that her run in Ice Ribbon recently also brought a lot of attention back to her, and also brought a lot of attention to Ice Ribbon, by the way, because she was on the cover of Weekly Pro as when she won the title there. The one that I want to call out here or give a shout out to here in this match is Hiragi Kurumi, because I think that she is so underrated. I said it on Twitter as well, and I think a couple of others noticed this too during this match. She was so good in here. This moment where she landed this out of nowhere lariat that was so perfectly timed was incredible. I love the finish too with Saori. I think Saori kicked out of the Tequila Special first, and then Saori Ano did this backslide into a covering situation. I think it's called the Special Pottering. At least that's what my colleague has here on Perlov. Thought this match was very, very good.
Yeah, Bushi does a similar move where he does a backslide.
Yeah, the Bushi roll, right.
Yeah. But she's always did that. That was kind of her deal. I remember watching her. I watched her first ever match in Stardom. And back then, she was really, like, right away I could tell that she had a certain charisma to her. She had kind of the same... You know, and I really loved her back then, and a lot of her bridge stuff has been a big staple of her offense. Kurumi, totally agree, very underrated. It's nothing really about her wrestling that I think goes unnoticed. It's more so that she doesn't get pushed as much as Sarah and Suzu, so people don't really gravitate towards her that much. But in the ring, I think that she's a very good talent. She's always been in Ice Ribbon. She's another one of these that started very, very young. You know, like same as she was on the same level as Tsukushi and stuff in Ice Ribbon, and has grown along and just been a great powerhouse wrestler and shows what you can bring together. And they're just a great trio, prominences. I think they work so well together. You've got Suzu and Risa being kind of, Suzu's more of a high speed style, Risa is more of an all around performer, and Kurumi is more like a powerhouse. So they work together well. I'm kind of bummed that they lost the titles, but this is a match that shows the depth of talent in Stardom. Kairi and Ano are main event vendors. Like they're not fit from the top wrestlers. Like, you know, at the end of the day, and Natsupoi is I loved her performance so far the last year or so. I think she's really come along and been a great performer. Obviously, her and Tom have their team, and the whole group has come together really well. This feels like a main event act, even as artist champions. And this was a really strong match. I don't think there's any way you could look at this as anything but a smashing success. And I have to praise Prominence for their run in Stardom. But it was the right time, honestly, because they had won the titles. They won the Derby with the Trios teams. So they did everything they could do pretty much as this unit. And I think that this group restart and being around, obviously, Tom after the main event. I mean, this is a main event act. And I think it was a great decision to put this together. Great decision to bring in Ano, who is just a tremendous talent. This could be a sleeper team going forward. And kind of what I said about the Goddesses team, or Goddesses titles, even though it's a 6-man title, the quality is so high. Yeah. And it's such a great title, and I think they're going to do many big things. And this was a great match overall.
They definitely have all the tools with this team to be a headlining act with these titles.
Yeah, this is, I thought... Anu looked really good in this. This was, of course, her re-debut in Stardom. Her first match back in Stardom. Should be noted that this is Anu's second Yokohama Arena match this year.
Wow.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a really funny fact because, of course, Saori Ano teamed with Jungle Kiona to face Mayu Yuiki and Natsu Sumire. On the Yokohama Arena.
Yeah, Muto Bye Bye Show.
Yeah, Muto Bye Bye Show. Yeah, that is a fact that I like noticed now while I was looking up on the cage match.
How about that, man? Yes. So, great stuff.
I thought Anu looked just awesome in this. Also, Kairi was crazy good in this. She did a, like, running Destino when she bounced off Susu on Risa that I have been replaying in my head ever since I saw a gif of it. It is beautiful. And yeah, this is like one of my favorite styles of wrestling. Well, of course, because I'm a Dragon Gate fan, this is like the classic Dragon Gate unit versus unit match type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it just doesn't stop and there's no downtime and it kept going the whole time.
That's absolutely true, yes. And wow, until this point, this card was firing out of all cylinders, except for the tag title match, maybe, but everything on this card, I thought, completely delivered. Some things smashing success, like this six-man, six-woman tag, like Himeka versus Maika. It was really time for a break, for an intermission, but we only got a really short break before the real business end of this card started with four more singles matches. I don't know what you two felt about this, but I was at the end of the main event after the stretch of these four singles matches. Even though they were so different, I was really exhausted and I could have used an intermission.
Yeah, an intermission could be useful.
I was electrified after the main event. It's such a moment to happen that, so, you know, it's hard to even think about back before that, but... Yeah, I mean, it was fine to me. I didn't have any negative thoughts on that.
Some last things about the restart win is that this is Kairi's first belt in Stardom since 2016.
Oh, yeah, that too. As well, man. That's right. She had the IWGP Women's title, but it's not a Stardom.
Yeah, and she got the pink artist belt, which was the one she wore when she and Io and Mayu held the titles.
See, that's why we got you on the show here, Sondre. These facts just dropped here. Man,
wow.
Left and right.
Kairi is my favorite women's wrestler of all time, so I noticed those things.
Yeah, then just continue, please. The wonder of Stardom title, Mina Shirakawa, defeated Saya Kamitani after an absolutely tremendous run that she had for 480 days. She failed now in her 16th title defense in a story that had so much reality to it that reality overtook fiction, and that probably Stardom felt they had to deliver this one and they had to finally put Mina Shirakawa over Saya Kamitani in 18 minutes, with Saya not being able to land the Phoenix Splash at first because she was hesitant, and then the Phoenix Splash wasn't enough. But then it was Mina with the figure four driver, Mina in the end, that secured the title for her. Sondre, this match, please.
This was all over the place for me. There were so many like factors of this match where I felt at the start of the match I felt it was rushed, mm-hmm. and by the end of it I felt like it had been an epic war. Like the first like 10 minutes I felt were like really rushed together, and at the end I realized, oh, maybe that was just the point. Maybe they wanted to just have a finisher spam match.
Yeah.
And I'm not against it. It made it feel like Mina really earned the win, something that she needed to definitely earn. Like, I've always said that I don't feel like Mina was the one that should have taken the title of Saya. And if she was going to take it, it would have been the day she got hurt. Of course, I don't think the plan was for her to win, because the way that match was told, it just didn't make sense. But I think that was the moment I would have done it before this match, before I saw how the crowd reacted to Mina during this match and how over Mina got as the match went on.
Mm.
And as the near falls kept coming, and when she kicked out of the Phoenix Splash and the crowd just erupted, was...
I mean, this has been a staple of Saya Kamitani's title run, that she always kicked out of impossible situations. And yeah. Now her opponent did that as well.
And also the story of Sayaka Mitani not being sure of going for the Phoenix Splash, like Muto did in his retirement match, kind of, where she at first hesitated and then later in the match she hit it. It was a really cool story that played out. But yeah, how do you feel about this, Dylan? You are more critical of Sayaka Mitani than me.
Well, the problem is not Kamitani to me. It's that, yeah, the stuff you were saying is true. The moment she should have won the title was after that promo.
Yeah.
Doing it here is fine. The booking leading up to it was very bad and took away from it, in my opinion. And usually, I mean, you look at last year, I would say Stardom was like 99% effective booking wise, like easily the best company in terms of storytelling, and everything was good. And then the start of this year, they've had some weird missteps, you know. I think this was one of them. I think the Triangle Derby, I personally didn't mind that because I thought it added some importance to meaningless house show matches. But then you see the Cinderella tournament being what it was. I didn't think was very effective at all. It objectively was not effective if you look at their attendances.
Yeah.
This Mina deal, how can you go from that amazing babyface moment and the amazing promo that she cut? She felt like she was ready then. And then they go to Club Venus. What? How does that work, you know? Like, how did we go from the top babyface overcoming a devastating injury to a heel group and, like, not in line with what they needed? If they had done that more, I think this all would have been a lot more satisfying for me personally as a viewer. The match quality here was fine. Again, I think, again, if you just kind of look at the, like you kind of said, a finisher spam match. If you're into that, if you're just into the moves, then I think this was a very big success. And the crowd was into it, so you can't say it was not a success. But for me, I didn't think this was a standout match on this. And if it were on maybe a lesser show, I think it would have had a much better, you know.
I would agree with that. This was on the lower end of these four singles matches to me.
I do think, though, that we should acknowledge how good Mina Shirakawa has become since she came over to Stardom. Like,
absolutely.
She has improved so much since she... Like, Dramatic DDT posted a picture of Mina in DDT. And I don't know if you guys remember Mina in DDT, the few matches she had there, but she was rough.
She was. And when she first came to Stardom, I was really not hopeful for her career in that company because I thought that she, in TJPW at that point, probably was a bigger fish in a smaller pond. But then she transferred over to Stardom, where she immediately was at the lower end probably of the table here. But much like you said, she improved so dramatically over the last couple of years, not only when it comes to her wrestling, but also of the entire vibe that she has and the way that she carries herself like a true superstar she does. And that's a payoff that she got here. And I can totally understand, Dylan, that this weird Oedo Tai version 2 thing is weird right now because it completely distracts from the actual story of her being the babyface.
Yeah.
But if you just take this match on an island in just out of the context of this show, I think it completely worked out.
Yeah, like I said, it was fine if you want a finisher spam match overall. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's a great point. Club Venus is more like Oedo Tai than Oedo Tai. It's the real Oedo Tai at this point. But I know we're not going to disrespect the fighting H Cup idol. Her run in DDT and TJPW, the girl Dino, pretty much was what she was doing back then, which is not a main event gimmick in a real company at the end of the day. So you have to see that, and she has improved so much. If you compare where she was at the start, you know, you look at the difference between her and she was paired with Unagi a lot, and I just think Mina blows her out of the water as an in-ring performer. Overall, and I think that shows you how hard, and she's been that way for a while. She's shown how hard she can work in a lot of those matches, and she deserves a lot of praise for that. I have no problem with her winning the title because it was at the big show, You want your big moments at these big shows. And yeah. I mean, obviously, Stardom clearly agreed with that philosophy based on all the title changes. So
based on all the big moments, yeah.
Yeah, well, obviously, title changes are those moments for the most part, overall, except for the next match.
Yeah, except for the next match. This is the one that I waited for, Dylan, because I want to hear you talk first about it.
Oh, this was my favorite match of the show.
Of course it was. That's
why. I'm not shocked.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the style of match, this is what I think wrestling is at its best at.
Oh, yeah.
Just two people, in this case women, but any gender works fine. Two people beating the hell out of each other. Like, it's so simple, but people try to make it so complicated. Because you have these two going at it, and perfectly placed in addition to the Hashimoto versus Mirai match from a couple of months ago, which to me was one of the best matches of the year. And I was like, man, I was looking forward to that match, but it was so good. How are Shuri and Hashimoto going to be able to top this? And then they did it. And it was like, of course they did it. It's Shuri. So of course she did it at the end of the day. I mean, what a spectacular performance when you look at these two.
People forget that Shuri is like the best women's wrestler. It is scary how many people forget that she is still like the best women's wrestler on the planet.
I know, right? But not me. I never doubted you, Shuri. I'm the one who gave you.
I never do either.
Those runs. But yeah, like just a great match and such a standout thing on the card where you look at these two. And there's a lot of great matches, don't get me wrong. But if you compare this to the match before, even the two matches after it, to me, this was a completely different style and level of match when it comes to the physicality of it, whether it's the strikes, not to mention the suplexes of Hashimoto as well. And by the end of this, I mean, this was a long match for what they were going for. This was over 15 minutes, 16:07, according to Cage Match. And it just felt like such a well-earned win and such a well-earned match in general that Shuri getting the win, just it was awesome. With the finish, I predicted, too, that the kick to the head that knocked her out cold as she deserved after pouring soda on her in her home arena. So Shuri, what a great match.
I don't know if you predicted the headbutt that would sound like hell in the biggest venue possible.
I might not have predicted it, but I loved it.
It was awesome.
There was a lot of headbutts on the show that were shoot style that sounded great. Whether you'd look at the Micah match, remember the big headbutt they had there? And the main event, you had some shoot strikes as well going on. So yeah, there was a lot of shoot stuff going on right there. Yes.
And what you said is totally true. And this is why this show was so well received. And it's just another accolade to this tremendous card that they put together, that they were able to have four completely different singles matches on top of this card with Shuri and Chihiro, definitely going a style that I also very much love. And I can't really add anything more to what you said, Dylan, except for this was probably my second favorite match of the show. I like the main event a little bit better just for the circumstances of it, but just wrestling wise, also from the ratings that we have right now in Cage Match, they are very close, 9.28 for Shuri and Hashimoto and 9.40 for Nakano and Julia. Very close to each other. I think really that these two are the two standout matches.
Yes, 9.32 and 9.36 now even, so it's getting close.
I haven't updated, okay.
This
there you go. Yeah, right.
Shuri and Hashimoto and Julia and Tam are both on my top five matches of the year right now. Shuri and Hashimoto placing four and Julia and Tam placing one.
And the thing is, this match shows how special it is because the main event has the moment. You know, like
the main event has the long-term story.
and just everything about it is going to be remembered. This has, I mean, they did some goofy build-up stuff. Like, you know, the story's there. I mean, she beat up Mirai, like I said, a couple of months ago. It's not like there's nothing to it. But ultimately, this wasn't for titles. This wasn't some, you know, triumphant story. There wasn't a huge main event. It was just a great match, you know, and that's the difference between this match and the main event to me. The main event will be much more remembered and it has that extra stuff to it. But this was just a match.
This was the in-ring match of the night.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. You can make the case. Yes, of course. What followed between this and the aforementioned main event, of course, was the match for the IWGP Women's title, in which Mayu Iwatani defeated Mercedes Moné in 12:56. Multiple times she was able to counter the Moneymaker in the early parts of the match to bounce back and hit her signature moves, including an incredible buzzer kick to the forehead of Mercedes that gave her this big lump that she showed off after the match with...
And I think they went home earlier because of that.
Yeah, it might have been because the match was shorter than you'd expect this. But this was that looked grueling for Mercedes. The finish was Mayu's Dragon Suplex. It looked like that Mercedes was on the verge of kicking out in that situation, but it was enough for the three count. She was so happy after the match. I was very certain that she was going to win this match. I never really thought that Mercedes would defend this one, because this on this grand stage to me felt like it was just the perfect moment to have a coronation for Mayu Iwatani's long-lasting career in Stardom. She's been there from day one, and also for the entrances, what a great way for Mercedes to just also talk shit here. You can always say yes. She also, of course, the main aspect of her mask and of her entire outfit was to pay homage to Eddie Guerrero and his Black Tiger character. But of course, she was wearing a tiger mask. That is something that was in the early parts of Stardom, in the early years of Stardom, was a staple of the Daughters of Stardom. And a staple of the company as a whole. When you, for example, look at the style of attire and the mask that Starlight Kid is going with. So, yes, the tribute to Eddie, but also great sense of talking shit here.
Yeah, Mayu used it for years. Like, she only recently stopped using the mask during the entrances.
Yeah, you know, and I think that the match itself... I agree with what you said, Striga, but I also think they did a great job in planting seeds of doubt heading into this match, especially for me. Yeah. When they were talking, a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it came out right before the show that Mercedes had re-signed with Stardom, which I thought was a great, like, a great timing of that. And a lot of stuff we've seen is basically, you know, her just saying, you know, how much she loves being in Japan and loves her wrestling there. And the match was really good. I think that the timing of it was interesting, just the shorter amount compared to some other matches, but it wasn't that short, in my opinion. It wasn't like, it was only a few minutes shorter than Shuri and Hashimoto.
They did a lot in those.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
the first 6 minutes, we, I think, saw three or four attempts of the Moneymaker.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel cheated by this match, personally.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, like, because that's what you're seeing a lot is, oh, I can't believe it's so short. But I didn't think it was that short to me, for what they did.
I just never will understand the criticism of, like, shorter matches. And this, it was not like a 5-minute match, like, on the Tokyo Dome. I can see why you felt cheated because of that match back
that
then. With Tom and Kaede. Yeah. But this was a long-ass show. And when you have a breezing 13-minute match at the top of the card, I mean, how can you complain about that?
Yeah. There were some people have said that they wanted the match to be a bit more violent. That they felt the story needed more violence in it. Which is, like, a fine criticism, I guess.
I agree and disagree to that, but I will say, like, the build-up, like, obviously you love more violence, but more importantly, I don't agree with the story context. I mean, the build-up to this was Mercedes singing that goofy song.
which is still sung in this match itself.
Yeah, yes.
I think people who are, like, rating this low or saying, like, this was, disappointing... where people were hyping this up as, like, one of the greatest matches of all time, just going into the show.
So it's hard not to be disappointed, because it wasn't that.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly is a confrontation. I mean, on commentary, they compared this to if John Cena had faced Hiroshi Tanahashi at some point. And of course, the names that you have in this match are tremendous, and two of the most well-known stars in women's wrestling worldwide. Yeah. But that does not make it automatically make it a match that you need to expect to be a five-star match.
Yeah. Mercedes Moné, like, is arguably one of the best American women's wrestlers of all time. Mayu Iwatani is the best women's wrestler of all time, in my opinion. but it still doesn't mean that the match will, when they haven't faced each other before at all, that will not make the match like a banger match immediately.
I
think this is one of those matches where you need to go in there with tempered expectations, and you will be impressed like I was. I was hooked to this whole match, and at the end of it I said, yeah, this was a great match. It's a shame they had to follow like one of the best in-ring worked matches this year, but
yeah. So this match was sandwiched between two of the highest rated matches in recent memory, I would say, with Shuri and Shiro Hashimoto, and the main event of Tam Nakano going over Julia for the World of Stardom title. So also, while the white belt changed hands, the red belt also changed hands. Tam beat Julia 23-40, rated 9.36 as of right now. Sondre, this was a wild main event, and I hope that you coped well, because you said that this will leave you as a destroyed man in the end.
Yeah, this, no matter the result of this match, I was destroyed. Like, I was, this was the match I was the most invested in the whole show. I said when this match was announced that this match was is one of the most important matches in Joshi this year. It makes sense why it's the main event of their biggest show to date. And it's just, on the way to this match, I have been having so many doubts about what the finish is going to be, who is going to win. But in the end, I've always settled on, this is the biggest show to date. This is going to be the time to strap Tam Nakano up. This is going to be the time to do that. I've always said that. Me and Dylan had a long discussion about this on the Patreon when we previewed this. And I don't think this show would have been such a like feel good end if Julia had won with the way she was working this match.
Sandre, let me stop you right there. I told you on the preview, and I'm telling you now, Flex, man, you called this. You never doubted Tam Nakano. You got to do your victory dance right now. Give it to me, brother.
This is not a video podcast, but you can dance nonetheless.
Yes, there's no rules against dancing on this podcast.
I was on my feet for most of this match, so I am a bit tired.
Expected nothing less.
But like, either way, either winner would have made sense. But the way they were telling this story, the whole match, Julia was being way more of a heel than she's been the last year. She was like bullying Tam. She was the one that brought out the table. She was the one that was the most violent.
Yeah, she broke the rules numerous times with the closed fist punches.
And like numerous times she played to the crowd and said, well, who cares? I can use closed fists. The ref doesn't care. I won't be disqualified. I'm the champ. It was really funny to see Julia back to that heel role again. And I really, really enjoyed that. Which, of course, made sense because Tam was going to win. It was going to be the triumphant Tam Nakano win. And, man, what a moment.
Yeah, man, what a moment. I really can't add a lot to that. This was a match really built on the story that these two had. When was the Heaven's Image? 2 years ago?
Yes.
2 years ago, based on that match. And the hatred during the match really came out. You said it, Julia being the big bully. And in the first couple of minutes, it really looked like that Julia would make this match very short when she hit the Northern Lights bomb like 3 minutes into the match. And she was like completely dominating Tam Nakano. But at some point, the tide then turned. Julia was dominant. She had this match won, but apparently Tam Nakano is the one that she just cannot put away. And then it was Tam's time to build up her dominance against Julia. So the tide really turned at the halfway point of this match. It was really, really interesting. To the time in the finishing sequence that the Violet Screwdriver then brought the end of Julia's red belt title run. And that's something that's, to me, very interesting to what you two have to say about this. Because at first, question A, how do you look back at Julia's title run now that lasted 115 days? And B, what do you expect from Tam Nakano's run, Dylan?
I think the match itself was a tremendous performance, as you expect, very much a main event style match that you would expect. And they did play the roles in this match of Julia leaning much more heel than she had before. And I think that ultimately this title reign has to be like, and I kind of feel the same way, because I totally agree with what you said, Sandre. Like, in a vacuum, if Julia won, this moment wouldn't have been nearly as big and heartfelt as it was. You know, I think Tam winning put this show over the top. You know, it is the cherry on top of, like, an amazing show. It would have been great either way, but this now makes it that much more special. A first-time title win, very climactic, and a very dramatic and awesome performer in Tam Nakano getting the win. It felt like a great, heartfelt, feel-good moment, which is always good to end a big show on. As a title reign, I can't imagine not seeing this as a huge disappointment overall. Like, Julia's title reign started off with so many great expectations and an epic match, like one of the best ever. And basically, I mean, the Suzu match was good. There was nothing wrong with it. But most people would say that it was not as good as their match in October. And it wasn't. Yeah. It's not a very remembered match at the end of the day, even 2 months later, and especially by the end of the year. The Yuki match, I personally loved and thought it was fantastic. But it was still a draw. Like, it wasn't a clean win.
Now that she isn't Red Bull champion anymore, you will get that rematch.
They should have had it with the Red Belt, in my
opinion. Yeah, but they can't do that. Maya doesn't want to do that.
Well, then I still think that the Red, you know, that's fine. Yeah. But I still don't think this is ultimately, my gut feeling on this was not the right call. Like, it just, even though it was a great win and a great moment, I think there was just so much left in the tank for Julia as champion. I can't understand what.
I still feel that we should wait with saying that. Like,
we wait to see, and I know you don't want to hear it, but yeah. I'm being very honest with you right now. My gut feeling right now is that it was a big mistake, because to me, I look at Julia much different after this match than I did coming into it, to be honest with you. I don't see her at that level that I saw her as, in terms of the overwhelming, like, top star Okada level character of Stardom. That's just not true, like, anymore. Like, that got proven not true in this match.
If she was on that level, she had won the match. Okada wins these matches.
Exactly. And that's exactly what she should be, in my opinion. And a thing that I think the company needs. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that Tam Nakano doesn't have a lot of potential. I mean, look at her crossover value, her with the album that they just released, which is another, you know, it's not like this was some terrible thing that happened, putting Tam Nakano as the champion. I wish that they had built to it more overall. Like, I think that's still my main criticism of this, is that I think it would have been even better if they had built to that Tokyo Dome show that I talked about going forward. You know, if they had had Julia have this epic reign, you know, like, that they could have had.
Yeah, I still feel like that would I've been, I don't know. It would have done, like, it. This, I feel like a short red belt reign was needed. I have felt that way. I've talked about this last year, even before Julia won, that I didn't want another three, like, year-long reign of the red belt, because this was the first, if it had continued for a year, another year, it would be the fourth year-long red belt reign in a row. And that would have been, I feel like that would have been so repetitive for me. And I feel like this freshens up the scene a lot. And it really is needed for me. Of course, that is also like, I do not think they have the next ace yet. Julia is close to that, yes. But I don't think she quite fits what an ace should be.
What is she missing?
Yeah.
She this may sound weird, but I think Julia is way too much of a heel for an ace. Julia always goes to the bully like way of wrestling.
But that's what
she
that's what put Okada over earlier this year.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
But that's not what got Tanahashi the ace status.
No.
The ace should be someone that works from underneath the most of the match and then triumphs in the end. That is the perfect ace. That is why Tanahashi is the perfect ace. And
what about all these other aces that don't work like that? Misawa wasn't like that.
Mayu Iwatani was like that. That is the only other ace they've had in this company.
Agree and disagree at the same point, but because you bring up the idea of Tanahashi, of course, but there are different approaches.
Yeah,
I guess you can go with the ace.
Yeah.
With, I think like the perfect counterpart to that is just look at Okada and what Okada has done for the other Bushiroad company, and building Julia in the image of Okada, I think, would have worked out just fine.
Yeah. Then again, Okada's first reign wasn't that long either.
That's true. That's a good point.
The part about the people do not understand the company that say stuff like that. Look at I brought it up on the show. Look at the history of the red belt. There's two people in the entire history of this company that have been two-time red belt champions.
Yeah.
Io Shirai.
Yeah, but the company is changing. The company is changing a lot.
Okay, yeah. has that happened yet since the company's changed?
Well, the company is changing in
the last 3 years.
Bruce, no, I'm saying has. Oh, in the last 3 years, there's been a two-time champion.
No, because they haven't. They have just. I don't.
So it actually hasn't changed, is what you're saying?
Well,
which is exactly true.
They started off the Bushiroad reign with. Yeah,
guys.
But I'm not talking about different aspects. I'm talking about the red belt champion.
Yes, and with the other belt, let's look at the white belt as an example here too. Yeah. We get Mina Shirakawa on top of this division, and we got Tam Nakano on top of the division. That's highly unusual for Stardom to put two women into the top spots that have not been there from the get-go, and that I don't know are they both signed to the company? I think Mina is a freelancer, isn't she?
No, she's signed.
She's also signed to the company.
Yeah.
I'll look at the Japanese Wikipedia app. But definitely two from the outside. And Julia is also another one that came in from the outside. So in that aspect, the company is changing. But I can also see Dylan's point here. Being a two-time red belt champion, that will be a tremendous hurdle to get over for Julia.
And like I said, you know, it's totally different from New Japan. How many times did Okada win the title in New Japan? Like, you know, like that's totally different. Like, people, they can't turn off other companies when they look at unique ones like this. And the reason why, if you understand Stardom, Rossy Ogawa came from the All Japan women's lineage. Mm-hmm. And you look at that, that was an era of Bull Nakano, Aja Kong, years-long title reigns all on their own. To me, that is the ideal version of a champion, is one when the belt is protected. And there's definitely room for short title reigns. I'm not saying that there can't be. But I think when you are building up your top star, in the era of Joshi, which again works. And you said it earlier, Striga, on this very show, talking about Azumi. You just don't know how long these people are going to be around for at the end of the day. Like, you don't have time to do seven-time world champions and all of that stuff in Joshi. You have to really go while the iron is hot if you want to do that. And like I said, Tom Nakano may be a better choice at the end. Like, there's no rule that says she can't be. And I love her as a wrestler.
Was definitely a great moment for her to close out the show, much like we said at the beginning of the show, like closing this show out without anyone coming out to challenge her. And with the crowd completely in the palm of her hand and shouting along. And that's something else that made this show really stand out is the incredible, incredible crowd. The way that all the women that were put over in these matches were over to a degree that it was boiling hot and it was heated. Tom felt like the biggest star of them all at the end of the show.
Yeah, that's the one great thing positively that you can take from that.
I talked with someone that was in the crowd, and he said that the vibe of the whole show at the end would have been so different if Julia had won, which is, that the way they told the story, that just makes sense.
And plus, just naturally, it would be that way. Like, there's no doubt that's true. Like, if Julia had won, the moment would not have been what it is. There's no way you could say that.
I think that is why this title change makes sense for me. Like, this just, it is a big show. It is the biggest show they've done so far. Why not end with a triumphant, like, title change? In the long run, we'll see. I don't think this will be Julia's last run at the top. But this might be Tom's last run at the top.
Mm. Yeah, that could be very well be.
You are way too hopeful on that one. On Tom not retiring.
No, she's not going to retire. Like, people, again, you don't understand the influences on this. I've said it a million times. Like, people get scared and stuff, people that don't understand. But she's not going to retire. Like, at the end of the day.
We'll see.
Like I said, you really don't have to worry about it. But that's not going to happen.
This is going to be Tom's only reign with the red belt. That I am pretty sure of.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you can say it about everybody. Like, if you get a title, if you get a red belt reign, it's special for that reason. Like, to me, I agree. Well, like, I agree with what they do. I think that should be. Like, you shouldn't see 5, 6, 7 times champions to the point where New Japan had to remake a belt because the Okada won the belt too many times. They had to do a new belt, and that was a huge flop. You know, if he had been a one-time champion, if he did get a two-time champion, that would be a huge deal. But unfortunately, they drove that away. And that's not just New Japan. That's every single company you can point to. You know, Kento Miyahara in All Japan has been a multiple-time Triple Crown champion to the point where people don't even want him to be the champion anymore. They want to move on to somebody else. In Stardom, if you become a two-time champion, that means something special. And I think that they should keep that in place in general. But what I was going to say was, I'm more positive on this. The title change happening after seeing it happen and seeing the show that came before it and the end result of it all. Because I agree with what you were saying, Sandra. If Julia won, it would have been totally different and worse, in my opinion, for a moment.
Yeah.
My view of Julia has lessened pretty dramatically after this, and I still feel that she took a big step back. But it has to be that way, almost, with the way the company works. Tom is great. You know, and I think that she will have a great title reign.
Yeah. And if you're talking about the ace figure while we're just broaching back to that, something other than that I need to like mention with that is that I don't think Rossi wants to make his next ace someone that isn't from his company.
That may very well be true.
What we have seen with Julia's like run, and we saw with the Mayu Yuhiki matches, that she still has a lot of Ice Ribbon baggage. Like, both of her title defenses were Ice Ribbon, like, stories. Leftovers from Ice Ribbon. And
yeah, that's true.
It's kind of a, like, maybe you don't want to have your big next Mayu Iwatani be next Mayu Iwatani / Io Shirai / Kairi Hojo be someone from a company that you have never done work with or like that you don't control.
Yeah. Then let us look what's ahead of us here after this show. I think we've been through the most important stuff, if not all of the stuff on the show. We've been through all the matches and we've mentioned our favorite matches. We've mentioned our favorite moments. We've, at the beginning of the show, pointed out how important this show is going to be in a couple of years. And when we look back at this one, we will point to it as one of the most important shows in women's wrestling for years and years and years. I'm very sure about that. But what's ahead of us is the announcement of the 5-Star Grand Prix. That's going to start at July 23rd in Ottawa and will end in Yokohama Budokan on September 30. So once again, going to be a very lauded lineup. Dylan, are there any front runners that you could mention right now that you think have an opportunity to win this tournament this year?
I think that, you know, we didn't really even get into that too much. And I'm going to throw it to Sandra real quick before I answer this. What do you think of Tom's reign? Like, what do you think? How do you think that's going to go?
I see her holding it to the year-end show. Or the Dome show, if they do that.
Yeah, we don't know that. It's just speculation. But
whatever is their like big show at the end of the year, or at the start of next year.
Yeah, it'll probably be the biggest show in history of that company. Either way, even if it's not the Dome show.
And I see her losing it to someone she has history with.
I'm thinking that too.
Maybe they do Poi or something like that. Or someone other, like someone that she has deep history with, that she has, like, because what Tama Nakano is most known for is just going back to old, like, rivalries that she always has.
Yeah.
I hope in one defense she finally gets the win over Mayu Iwatani.
I was thinking that's what would happen. Like, if Mayu wins the 5-star. And like that's a main event match to me. And Tom gets her first ever win. If they want to go forward with Nakano as the leader of the company, which again I'm not down on if that's the case, but if they want to do that, that's the best possible way. Have the biggest show of the year end with a retain of the title.
Speaking of Mayu, Tom has now joined the two-time holder. The only held red belt and white belt thing. Which Mayu, Iyu, Kairi, Julia, and Tom now has, they've held the red belt and the white belt, and they are the only ones that have done it.
Yep, true.
Just another historical fact that I remember now.
But I think that Mayu would be the best bet to win. You bring her up. You have her movie coming out later this year. And you have all that history. And to give Tom her triumphant final win that she's never gotten over Mayu feels like a great story. Again, and I don't see any negatives. Like I said, I think Julia should have been that person that we talked about, that Okada person. But I don't think there's any negatives on Tom being the champion or the main person. I think she has a lot of great things you want. And is she's also a great heroic character. So to have her get a triumphant win at the end, have Mayu pass the torch on, I think Mayu's much more likely to retire sooner than Tom, since you brought that up. Like I said, I don't think Tom is going to retire before Mayu. And I think if you wanted to pass that torch on, and Mayu is already kind of in that, you know, she to me is much more similar to a Tanahashi.
Yeah, like she's in the Legends run right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like a great person for her role, but not the top of the company anymore. And I think if you make that one pass torch moment on, I think that would be a dramatic moment akin to this, like at the end of the show, at the biggest show of the year or whatever, at the end of the year, just have them hug at the end, you know, Mayu puts her over as the, you know, like she finally overcome her, which is a big part of her story in Stardom, or in Stars when Tom was still there, was trying to overcome Iwatani. So that would be my idea for it. I'm not saying that's for sure going to happen, But I think Poi would be a great person to come in there if they want to set her up as a, yeah.
Yeah, I see Poi as being what a potential taking it off her, the winner. Like, I see Poi as one that could win it from her. I see Mirai as that.
I really like Poi. I don't see her quite at the level of a Tom, like where she got the big win. You know, yeah. I think she needs to be built up a little bit more.
The first title defense for Mina Shirakawa is Natsupoi.
Yep.
That got confirmed during the show.
Yeah. Who's Mirai challenging?
They haven't said.
No.
yeah, the worst Cinderella tournament ever.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Pointed that out. Her big moment was getting the tag title here.
Yeah, that's all that it led to. It's the tag title.
What about the others that lost their titles here? Saya Kamitani and Julia. Do you think they have chances in the 5-star?
Saya definitely has.
Yeah. Saya would be one of the favorites. That's who I predicted would win at the start of the year. I thought it would be her versus Julia.
And Saya also has a lot of history with Tom that you can play off of.
Yeah.
Julia, this match to me that they just had felt like the closure of this story to me. Not to say that they can't ever come back to it again.
They are now 3-for-3.
Yeah, exactly. Like this feels like the closure of this as a story. They could still do just like Tanahashi and Okada, right? New Japan. They've done that match a million times. I'm sure they'll do this match a million times. But for the main purpose of this story, this felt like the end of the line. I don't think Julia should win and rematch. I think her future is very interesting though. Like now that she's lost the title, because now where does she go? Like, how could she keep up any momentum that she had? And like I said, I think the title reign as a whole was really disappointing. Like, I mean, this was... She won an amazing match and lost it in a great, great match. If the stuff in between wasn't at that level.
Yeah, if they were gonna have... Like, this is something I definitely agree with you with, is that if they were gonna have Tom win on this show, they should have fleshed out Julia's reign in between much more. Like, they should have had much more Julia defenses in the first half of this year.
Mm, yeah.
I think it would have meant so much more if Tom had won the 5-star, because they played off of that too, where Tom had beat, or Julia had beat Tom in the 5-star final in a great, great match last year.
Yeah. But the thing about that is that they might have, like, that frees up an entire year for that build. And that might have, like, people were already getting turned off with Julia's red belt. Like, it, some people were already, like, against her holding it for the rest of the year.
Yeah, some people were against Shuri's title reign, too, and that worked. So, I try not to listen to people like that say goofy stuff. You know, Julia's title reign could have been great. It wasn't, but, you know. And like I'm saying, I think there's a lot of interesting stories you can tell from her point of view, so to speak, at this point, because now she's lost the title. Pretty much, like, they did that whole deal with her beating Shuri, and, like, now it's just gone. And so now what? You know, I think there's a lot of interesting things. I mean, like I said, my gut is not positive on her, at least short-term future, but... She's so talented, and she has so many great things about her. Hopefully, you could see her wind her way back into big things. But I don't think it's going to be this year. I think that whoever wins the 5-star will be somebody that, like I said, I think if they're committed all in on Nakano, you could put Mayu in, and that would be a great main event that would have a dramatic and epic payoff. And if you want to put somebody new in, yeah, I think Kamitani would be the one I would point to. Poi was a great choice as well, even though I definitely think at the end of the day, they want Kamitani to be a main player.
Yes.
Of the company. I mean, the white belt reign kind of proves that, but I do think that she's destined to win the red belt eventually. And if they want to do it now, I can't particularly hate on it. But to me, I personally, as a fan, would rather see this Tom story, where they go with that. Her white... That's kind of how they set up the white belt run, right? She beat Julia to have they had the epic ending at the end. You know, she felt like a superstar, most popular person in the company, amazing worker, has everything you want. And, you know, even that white belt title reign kind of gets lost in the shuffle, and like as time goes along. You know, I think that that's not up there in the legacy reigns of Momo Watanabe, Ari Sahoshiki, and Saya Kamatani even. Even though I personally think was not a huge fan of Kamatani as a lot of people's, but I think that it has more legacy. So we'll have to see. How can Nakano do, how can Tom do as the champion?
How can Mina Shirakawa do as champion?
Yeah, that's another thing. We didn't even bring her up, to be honest with you. But that's a big role to be the white belt champion.
Yeah. I don't think her reign will be that long. I see Mirai possibly ending it a bit early. A lot of people have... I put out the question, like, tweet earlier, and a lot of people have replied and said that this is their show of the year, and this was a show that didn't miss at all. Of course, this was right after the show ended, so there are a lot of recency bias there, but I think this, it should be worth like mentioning that even after the show ended, which was a 5-hour show, everyone was still talking about it and are still talking about it.
Yep.
Because this show had so many good matches. And the thing I found the most interesting was that a lot of people were saying different matches as their favorite. A lot of people were saying that Mina and Saya were their favorite. A lot of people were saying Tom and Julia. It was, and some people were saying the artist match. It was just so cool to see that so many people found different things they enjoyed about the show that kept going the whole show.
I mean, there was nothing on this show that was like, it was long, but that to me is not a criticism when the show is all great matches.
Absolutely, and it was not like there are these DDT shows that middle of the card that drag and drag because the quality is just not there. and this one was a long show too, but this had quality throughout, and if you have quality throughout, the show can be as long as it wants because you're into it.
Dylan, what do you want to rewatch first in full, this or Judgment?
Oh yeah, really tough. To me, I agree. I think this was I agree with the fans. I think this was the best show of the year, up and down. And I think that the ending, like I said, and I was against Julia losing the title, but I think that the ending made it even that much more special and spectacular. Like going in there, that's something we'll remember forever, I think, if you're a fan of the company right now. And I think that the show was so great. This was a Wrestle Kingdom level show, like the classic Wrestle Kingdoms everyone points to, like when they first started watching, you know, that Okada Tanahashi era. And there's no real company that gives you that. And that's why these shows stand out even more. Because
New Japan couldn't even give it such a complete card this year.
No. No, not at all. I don't think there's any real other company besides this one that would be able to beat this. Like, a top-to-bottom show. Like, you look at the matches. I mean, let's start from the start. You have the opener, the Azumi and Mei Seira match, which was really a great opener. You had the Fuwa-chan match, which, like Striga said earlier, maybe the most, like, legitimately popular match, just by exposure sakes. That had purpose. Like, both those matches had purpose. Micah Himika, that had purpose. God's Eye and 7-Up had purpose. All of the matches after that were title matches. Every one of these matches mattered, and they were important. And that's what a lot of these companies don't capitalize on. Like that Judgment show, most of that show was completely... It meant nothing, like 5 minutes after the show ended. And there's a lot of cards now where it's like, oh, 8-man tag at the opener, like doesn't matter. You know, you hope for that big, great last 4 or 5 matches, which this show did have, but it also had all the stuff at the beginning. Yeah. You know, like I said, Micah and Himika was the third match on the card, and that was like the most emotional one. I mean,
you will never find in a New Japan card a match that is match number 3 be as important as this one here in comparison.
Yeah.
Not only do I think it was the show of the year, not only do I think it was better than the other companies could do, I think this was better than Dream Slam 1. Like I said, as a show, top to bottom, I think this is better because
I agree, because I've suffered through, like, I like Dream Slam 1, but there are some matches where I just want to skip.
Yeah, DreamSlam 1 is a legendary show, but I mean, even the main event, to me, this main event blew that one out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the tag match with the FMW girls. So to me, this show has to be looked at. And I mean, the attendance was so high that you have to think, again, of the era. I mean, DreamSlam 1, again, did three times more people in it, to be fair. But it was a different era. You have to hope
also,
that...
Also, Yokohama Arena aren't open for 16,000 anymore.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But we have to hope that one day that era can return in terms of popularity. And I think Japan in general is getting there. You know, we're seeing the restrictions get lifted. We talked about the All Together show last episode. We still got a lot of fun with that. Hopefully y'all listen to that, a lot of the listeners out there. But you see stuff like this, it shows you where it's at. And it just makes me think, because when I first started watching Japanese wrestling, it was the Dark Ages, you know?
Yeah.
So compare this to what they were doing 10 years ago. This would have not been thought possible, pretty much, for a Joshi company in general to be the number two company in Japan. And I think that they've clearly established themselves as that as time has gone along. It was already known before the show, but this was like the exclamation point that this company is for real. The future is bright. And like I said at the start of this, just to bring it full circle, with Tam Nakano as the leader, I think is going to be a great champion. However long the reign goes, I think she'll do good in the role and be a great heroic champion. But they are just scratching the surface as a company of the great things they can do.
Yeah.
Yes, and I guess we'll have to wait and see what else Stardom has for us this year, Dylan. And those were great closing words on the Stardom review, I think. I want to thank you both for coming on this show. I had tremendous fun looking back at this one. This show that I enjoyed so much with you, because I know that you are very much into the promotion. First of all, Sondre, I want to thank you very much for jumping on the show for the first time.
Yeah, it, for the first time talking with you.
Yes, awesome. Absolutely.
That for me was the big draw. Having Sondre and Striga together, having my guys, my Europeans, two of my favorite Europeans come together. But I also love the idea of this show in general. Like, it played out perfectly because Sondre is such a, he's like the fans, man. You know, like, he's such a huge fan. Like, I feel like, in all honesty, Sondre, like, the match was good, but I think if they had had, like, the worst match ever and Tom had won, you still would have loved it because you love Tom so much. And it was not the worst match.
Yeah.
It was
great. It was a great match, though. So
no, it was.
They can't have a terrible match.
No, but like, even if something crazy had happened, I think you would have loved it anyway, just because Tom had won. That was the main thing for you. It wasn't about match quality. It was that Tom won, your favorite.
And at the end, I am a fan.
Yeah, exactly. You bring the fans' perspective. It's like you're not that much. I mean, I'm not going to say you're not a fan, but you're not following along these shows compared to Stardom.
I wouldn't say I'm a casual viewer for Stardom because I pretty much know all the talent on the cards, but I am not a close follower right now.
Yeah, like Sondre follows it way closer, like a true fan. And you're more like like you said, maybe casual is not the right term, and your knowledge base is like so high. And I'm kind of like in between, where I watch these shows. I love them because their wrestling is the best to me of any company. I don't really have a personal connection to any of the wrestlers on the show. Like, so-and-so is my favorite. They have to win. You know, like, there's nobody I would say on the card that I would get that same level of emotion that you got, Sondre, for Tom. Like, if they won. Even if it's, like, a favorite of mine, like Mayu or Mirai or whatever, or Kairi. I think that I'm kind of like the in-between. So we had three different, very unique perspectives on this company and this show, and I'm so happy that we got to do it.
Yes, tremendous point on your part. And I hope that everybody listening enjoyed these three different aspects, these three different perspectives on Stardom.
While we're plugging three different perspectives, if you want to listen to three different perspectives about DDT and Dragon Gate, check out the Dramatic Dream Dragons podcast with me and Dylan and Yannick. We covered DDT and Dragon Gate. Yep.
What a pro. What a pro.
Who do you think taught him that, Striga? Who do you think taught him how to be a shameless
You did. Blood? The ultimate worker did, of course.
Yes, exactly. But no, Sondre was born with it. He's a natural. So,
yeah, for the Fuma channel of the Dramatic Dream Dragons. Great stuff. So, yes, this has been the Eastern Lariat. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.